Periodically, we might encounter someone who will question us about our way, and most of the time, such questions are, I have to say, tendentious, meaning they come with a great deal of their own furniture, and you are expected to use the furniture provided to pursue any kind of exchange with the questioner. But I would say most of the time it's necessary to either explicitly or implicitly call attention to the fact that you've been presented with a room full of furniture that you're supposed to use. Now, a great question in this sense is, do you believe in God? And I can't think of too many people who can ask that question in a way that is not tendentious. So very often the questioner will insist that you answer the question in the framework that they understand. And for some people, that's strictly yes or no. If yes, you're one of the good people. If no, well, we know which way you're going. So I don't run around outside very often in my, so to say, church clothes. So people don't often ask, come up to me and ask me if I believe in God or what have you. But if and when they do, I tell them I can certainly answer yes to that question, but it's not the way that you mean. And then we can have a more developed conversation. Or sometimes they just become more militant. And for them, it's a very short step from, do you believe in God, to, well, don't you realize the Bible is inherent in every word and phrase, etc.? So someone could object, well, wait, don't you do that in Zen too? Don't you ask these tendentious questions? Like, what is Buddha? Well, it's true, we do ask such questions sometimes. But the accompanying furniture is rather spare. And in fact, it doesn't have much to do with the answer. It has to do with the meetings between beings. Some people believe that certain persons can ask such questions in a way that will enlighten somebody else. But that's actually mythology. So in our way, such questions have more to do with whether I or somebody else can meet in, so to speak, a space of no meeting. A space where even props such as meeting or not meeting are set aside. Now, I would suggest that anyone can do that. That's always a possibility. But will, for instance, your interlocutor appreciate what just happened? I think most of the time, probably not. Then our old Zen friend, David Chadwick's a carefully curated website, Qk.com. And as I mentioned, he has been putting various quotes on Facebook. And the other day, he quotes a Suzuki Roshi lecture from a long time ago now, probably 68 or something. And Suzuki Roshi says something like, well, if you, you know, practice pretty carefully for perhaps a year, you will have some calm mind. Calm mind practice. But what usually happens is then people come up with problems. Well, I have this problem. Maybe they don't understand Dogen, or what or where is the point of our practice? or how long will I have to keep doing this before such and such? Suzuki Roshi seemed to think that a lot of his work was trying to get people to stop at that point where their practice of zazen is established, and they can just continue. So I think that was probably a challenge for him. I remember our beloved founder, Isan, telling me, Suzuki Roshi did not often offer Dokusan. I was surprised. He said, yeah, once in a while, but that's all. So the occasions for meeting with people and encouraging them to just settle into your practice. Don't go looking for problems. Mostly those occasions, I think, were to be found in Dharma talks and perhaps just the day-to-day of living with all these American students. In what remains to us of Suzuki Roshi's words and deeds, it doesn't seem to me that he very often presented his students with such questions as, okay, what is Buddha? For some reason, his successor, Zentatsu Baker, he did quite a bit more of that, and my teacher, Reverend Tenshin, he also did quite a bit more. Still does, I think. Presumably, they found it helpful to offer these invitations to share this no space space just for a moment. And ideally, that moment could also be joined with appreciation for what has happened. If not, well, maybe another time. To be able to exchange such questions to engage in probing there's a particular environment where that can happen more frequently. And where that kind of inquiry is an aspect of what I have called the quickening. However, it is not strictly speaking necessary. What is necessary is for us just to carry on. To trust that the Buddha way that we have received, it is not designed to fool anyone, except in a good way. Another such tendentious question that I occasionally have encountered is, do you believe in past lives? You believe in reincarnation? To that one, I usually say, no, we don't believe in reincarnation. We do tell the story of rebirth. And that's a little different. There's a tale in the great collection, record of transmitting the light, which I'm sure you all have your own copies of. And our ancestors, to use their Indian names, Punyamitra and Punyatara, they had such an encounter. Well, by the way, both their names and really practically all of the Indian names can, by the alteration of the length of a single vowel, be women's names. So we cannot actually be at all sure that even though they're presented as masculine figures, they might well have been women. So Punyamitra could easily have been Punyamitra. Prajnatara could easily be Prajnatara. They could both have been. And we may never know. But for long, I had assumed that that was probably the case. In any event, Prajnatara was an orphan somewhere in the vastness of India, and his teacher, or teacher-to-be, Punyamitra, was riding around in the king's chariot, I guess just for the heck of it, and Punyamitra had some inkling that he was going to run into an extraordinary person that day, and he sees this kid who people seemed to steer somewhat clear of because he was a little odd. And so he has the king stop the chariot and he says something like, "Do you have a recollection of former conditions?" And this the orphaned kid says, "Yeah, I do, and you and I lived in the same town." And Punyamitra nods and says, "Yes, I thought so." And the kid says further, "Yeah, you would expound to me the great teaching of perfect wisdom, and I would, revolve the sutra. And I meant to bring my sutra book and forgot, of course. That's one of those accordion books. And they have this lovely practice in the mystic East where you pick up a sutra book and you open part of it and all the pages go like this, and then you put it back the other way. This is called revolving the sutra, and sometimes there are several volumes. For instance, if it's the large sutra on perfect wisdom. And we were, I know I've said we were invited to do this when we were doing the Hayato ceremony at Sojiji in Japan. And they taught us how to do it. And it's a little tricky, but I did it perfectly that first time. And the priest who was instructing us said, "Oh, you're a good Sojiji monk, good." And then we get to the actual ceremony and I drop them off. So too bad. But anyway, this is revolving the sutra. So the kid was revolving the sutra and the so-called teacher was expounding on perfect wisdom. And thus began a, or re-began, began again a fruitful connection between the generations. And the kid later became known as Prajñātara or Prajñātara. And Prajñātara was whose teacher? Somebody remember?
Bodhidharma.
Bodhidharma. So this. It was Bodhidharma's teacher. And in fact, Bodhidharma could just as easily have been Bodhidharma. And again, a woman. Keizan goes on at, Keizan, of course, the author of the Record of Transmitting the Light, he goes on at some length about how these two particular ancestors met in the space that is no space. Met in a way that embodies the teaching of perfect wisdom, which is, of course, that emptiness and the substance of the limitless universe of phenomena are equivalent. So how did they meet there? If, you know, it's all empty. Well, it is, but that does not mean we get to ignore multiplicity. We say yes to unity, but we also say yes to multiplicity. And our great teachings instruct us. For instance, that you may heap snow into a bowl of silver. I can hardly tell them apart, but snow remains snow. And silver. And you can hide a heron, elegant white birds, in the moon. But heron and moon are still there. So this is our careful way with the teaching of the Buddhas and ancestors. And we how to say, we keep that ball in play by sitting in stillness and letting unity be unity and multiplicity be multiplicity. And at some point, knowing that we, all of us, exist at the fulcrum between. Ancestor Dogen says, all beings entirely are Buddha nature. And Buddha nature is entirely all beings. So watch out for those tendentious questions. And if you encounter such a questioner, see if you can invite them to step away from their furniture and meet you where you both actually are. Who knows, maybe only one of you will appreciate that encounter, but maybe both will. And then you maybe can enjoy our tradition of weird Zen questions without getting, you know, too annoyed by them. Some people get really mad, you know. It's one reason I hardly ever use the word koan, because some people can just get pissed off. Or, oh, I hate those. Oh. And of course, in even Zen people don't necessarily want to play that game all the time. You'll recall Case 23 of the Book of Serenity, where some poor monastic catches Master Ma, the great Master Ma, on his way to, I don't know, bathroom or something. He says, oh, excuse me, Master. Apart from the four propositions and the 100 negations, please point out to me the true meaning of Buddhadharma. Master Ma, who is reaching from the door to the bathroom, sort of just drops his hand and sighs and says, you know, I'm really tired today. I can't answer that. Why don't you go ask monastic Zhang? Okay, see ya. So off the monastic goes and finds Brother John, who's doing something, and asks the same question. Apart from the four propositions and 100 negations, what is the real meaning of Buddhadharma? And John says, well, I have such a headache today. When I read that, I sympathized immediately. I have such a headache. I can't really answer. Why don't you go ask the teacher? And the monastic says, well, I did ask the teacher. He said, come ask you. John says, go ask Brother Hai, okay? See you later. So he finds Brother Hai, who's out weeding the garden or something. He says his question. And Brother Hai drops his trowel, just sits there, unmoving for a minute, and then he says, When I get here, there is just nothing to say at all. And at this point, the monastic gives up. All right, you guys. Enough of this nonsense. Maybe next day or thereabouts, he goes and complains to Master Ma. Says, look, I have this pressing question, and I asked these guys, and here's what they said. And Master Ma strokes his chin and says, Zhang's head is white. Brother Hai's head is black. And that's what we're left with. So the monastic brought the entire furniture of Bodhi Dharma and presented it. Said, what does this really mean? His fellow monastics stepped to the side a little bit and says, why don't you come in here where there's no furniture? And probably one day, that particular monastic joined his fellow senior practitioners in that space and said, now I appreciate their generosity and patience. That's probably all I have for you today. If you have some question or comment, please. Yes, Doan-san.
Yes, I was thinking about when I grew up in Colorado, it was a very conservative place, and there were a lot of Christians, and there probably still are. And when I wandered into my first Zen center, 21, and started to practice, I got asked a lot about if that still involved me believing in God and do I believe in God. So I got the question dozens of times. And I had the kind of conflict little situations a few times. And I finally figured out I just have to ask them what that means. So then, like, how do you define God? And sometimes I was surprised. Sometimes people would say, like, this field of, you know, consciousness and all love. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can kind of get on board with your God. But a lot of times it was the other. And, I just learned to say, I wasn't totally polite about it, but I would say, is that only Zeus or Santa Claus in the sky? And then I said, I think about that. And I just would usually kind of leave it at that because I knew what their next answer was because I'd gone the other route before where going to hell. And I would just say, well, then apparently that's where my friends and family are. So that's why I go there anyway. But it was just kind of interesting because I had to answer that all the time. But that was my solution, was just to kind of ask them what God even was.
So once in a while I've replied, well, not the way you do. And sometimes that was enough of off-putting enough that they'd snort and go away. Once in a while, it would lead to something more lively.
Yeah, I'd get excited when they would say something other than that being. But then I was got caught up on the next parts, which would be like a friend who's become very Christian, new Christian.
Mm.
And he kind of said love and like a higher consciousness. And I was like, yeah, okay, maybe we're pretty aligned. And but still the language of I'm doing this for God or this to honor God. And that, and I was like, what does your God care about, you know, what you do mm. with your body or where you go or what life? Why is your God so interested in, you know, all these little minor details of your life? And kind of had a falling out over that conversation, actually.
But, mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting how aggressive that gets.
Yeah.
I did think of this, sorry, one last, I thought about the story you used to tell about Rhett when someone came to test sort of his being in the position he was in, and you said something along the lines of he was kind of like, I didn't sign up for this, or I didn't agree to this, like, sort of proving my knowledge or something. I thought you had told a story about someone coming and kind of wanting to test him.
The one I recall is it was Robert Aitken, who came to Zen Center. The invitation of somebody, I'm not sure who, to kind of clean up after Zentatsu's mess. And so he tried to engage my teacher with some Zen questions. And Rev basically said, I don't want to play that game with you right now. And then Aitken cited, well, obviously not enlightened. You know? It's like, okay, see you around.
A little bit like Mr. Ma there.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, I don't see any floating yellow hands. Oh, was there?
Yes. Yeah, I guess if someone's asking about God, you know, they're probably asking about something that matters very much to them. And
anyway,
you know, I try not to assume that I know what that is. Because if someone asks me about God, I have no idea what they're asking me about. Uh-huh. So I have a psychiatrist friend who works on the East Coast in a psychiatric emergency room. And your people will come in with very strongly stated beliefs and then want validation.
Yeah.
So it comes with something that, you know, the rest of us would say is, you know, this floridly delusional, whatever. So, well, Doc, what do you think? Do you think I'm crazy? And she likes to answer, what do you care what I think?
Yes. That's a good one. And if some shred of health remaining, that may be enough to pull things together a little bit for them. Anyway, my answer, not the way you do, tends to come up when I'm confronted by a certain type of militant Christian who would just as soon hit you over the head with the Bible, literally, if they could get away with it. So, but I don't always answer that way.
I'm just interested, you know, I try not to believe in anything that isn't God, but I don't think they will. I think there's a, you know, tendency in the West, you want there to be, you know, this conflict between God and the devil for the soul of man. And if it ain't that, it you know, then it's not worth anything. So having the duality and the non-duality is one of these, because you're saying basically you can't not have it both ways. And I think it's hard to get some traditions to agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do they care about, I think?
Yeah. Well, peace to all. Thank you very much.
This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, East Sanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.